Blog Talk Radio.
Monday, everyone. Happy Monday. This is Dr. Hank, and you're on the Dr. Hank Show. And the Dr. Hank Show is all about emotional intelligence. So if you're just tuning in, if you're tuning in for the very, very, very first time, this is the Dr. Hank Show, and the Dr. Hank Show is on the air to talk about emotional intelligence. But today, we always dedicate the last Monday of the month, and today is the last Monday of the month for this month anyway. And today we have a great guest, someone who is going to be sharing some information, not only about mediation, but around peer counseling and about working with young adults. You know, one of the things is in this world that we live in, we're always looking for someone to, quote, replace us, someone who's going to come in and take over when we are older or tired or can no longer do what we do. And we turn that over to the next generation. It's always the next generation, the next generation. So when we look at the next generation, who is the next generation? Well, when we're looking at conflict management and our mediation, it's not the 30 and 40-something. They're already in the workplace. It's not the 20-something because they're in the workplace too. But there's a group that's not quite in the workplace yet, or they're getting their feet wet. They're kind of sticking their toe in the water at this point in time, and it's the young adults, the young adults. And so that's what we're going to be looking at today. We're going to be visiting. Going to be visiting North Carolina. We're going to be visiting Charlotte, Mecklenburg, the community relations group there. And we're going to be talking with Mara Chavez, and she's going to be enlightening us. She's going to be sharing some things that they're doing there. Some things that, well, I'm going to say it this way. You ought to grab a pen and pencil or paper and pencil, because you'll probably want to take some notes about some of the things that they're doing there so that you can do some of those things in the community where you are. But before we get going, just want to take a couple of minutes and just talk a little bit about the Society of Emotional Intelligence. The Society of Emotional Intelligence. People often ask, what is the Society of Emotional Intelligence? And, of course, what's that all about? Well, several years ago, actually back in 2009, when the organization was in its infancy stages, just getting developed, we had a meeting and people were coming from a number of different cities, states around the country. And they said, you know, this is pretty good. We ought to do this more often. That is, get together and talk about emotional intelligence. But, you know, doing it once a year just isn't enough. So we formed chapters, and that was the beginning. And so since 2009, the Society of Emotional Intelligence has been around, and with the intent of spreading the word about emotional intelligence and how it benefits all of us. As a matter of fact, my latest book is titled EQ is for Everyone, and the focus was that emotional intelligence benefits all of us. And in so doing, and so talking about emotional intelligence, often people say, well, you know, emotional intelligence, that's for those smart people. That's for those people that have PhDs, or that's for people who are really have high IQs. Well, no, absolutely not. Emotional intelligence is for everyone, regardless of what your level is in an organization or regardless of what your age group is. You can put emotional intelligence to use wherever you are. A good example of that was last week I attended a professional development session that was hosted by the Tampa chapter of the Society of Emotional Intelligence. And we had an individual there. His name was Carl Davis. He was the speaker. And he's retired from the Hillsborough County Sheriff's Department. But his presentation was around how emotional intelligence can help a person become a better public speaker. Now, you're probably saying, well, wait a minute. He's from the Sheriff's Department, and now he's talking about public speaking and how emotional intelligence ties in. Yep, that's exactly right. And I could go on and on about that, but if I did, I'd be probably taking away some of the time of our guests. But I just wanted to share with you that when we talk about emotional intelligence shows up in a lot of different ways. So, you know, public speaking was just the subject for the meeting that I attended. We can probably put emotional intelligence with almost any other occupation or any other feel, you name it, emotional intelligence fits there. But anyway, I could be talking about that all day, but I think I want to try and get to our guest today and see what's happening. So let me just check in. Good morning. This is Dr. Hank. Mara, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, Dr. Hank.
Fantastic. Thank you. Well, you know, first of all, the first question that everybody's probably listening to here is, how are things in the Carolinas since Florence has been visiting you for a while?
Well, luckily, Charlotte didn't get the biggest impact that we had expected. There was some flooding. Some neighborhoods are still dealing with downed trees, getting that, but not as bad as towards the coast. Over the weekend, some of the highways got reopened because of the flooding being diminished a little bit. So we're getting there, little by little.
Oh, okay. Well, fantastic. I know, you know, being here in Florida, one of the things that happens whenever a hurricane comes through, people just assume that all of Florida was hit hard by the hurricane, and that's probably what people were assuming as it relates to the Carolinas, and particularly North Carolina, where you are. So I just thought I'd give you a chance to just kind of give us a quick update on how things are there. And so thanks. Thank you for that, Mara. Appreciate it. That probably helps to set a lot of people at ease to know that you guys are on the rebound now. So thank you for that.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you for asking, Dr. Hank. I mean, it is North Carolina is such a bigger state than a lot of people realize, that we are so widespread sometimes, but mm-hmm. we always, you know, try to rally together and try to get everything together. So we're helping out the people on the coastline.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Well, thank you for agreeing to be our guest today to come on and talk a little bit about some of the wonderful things that you guys are doing there. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that there are probably a few people that don't know who Mara Chavez is. So if you can just take a few minutes and just kind of introduce yourself to those that don't know.
Well, thank you again. My name is Mara Chavez. I am a community coordinator for the community relations. It's actually the community relations is a department of the city of Charlotte. I know a lot of mediation centers are not city-based, but we are city-based. So all of our programming is for the whole community, and we have our funding through the city department some of the funding. But I myself, even though I am about like 2 years into this position, previously I worked at the Mecklenburg County Courthouse for over 17 years. So my background is always seeing the flip side of the result of when people do not mediate or when they do not have that conversation, they end up being in court. So now it's just a different perspective for me to kind of work before they get into the courthouse, and it's a little bit of an adjustment to me. But I've worked with community relations for several years now, and I was just happy that I was able to get a job with them. It's a new position. It happened right after, about 2 years ago, right after the big Keith Lamont Scott shooting that we had, where we had several riots here. So CMPD, the Charlotte Mecklenburg Police Department, talked to the community relations to try to develop some kind of positions where we can actually go out into the community and be the ears and eyes of the police department. We're not sworn officers. But we do partner with the officers to determine, like, okay, this community, we need to kind of, you know, develop some programming here to see what's going on, but this is what we're hearing, type of things. And that's one reason why this whole concept of peer clubs kind of started blooming, you can say. One of the things is a lot of the younger adults and their perception as to what happened, and then the uprising that happened was a lot of young folks taking to the street. So we're trying to figure out and find different avenues and different methods to try to get to the younger adults. Because I heard a little bit of what you were saying at the beginning. You know, a lot of people don't realize this is the next generation that's coming up.
That's right.
So those of us in government sometimes kind of, you know, set their opinions to one side, saying, oh, they're not old enough, but we need to realize that they're the next ones that are going to be taking over our places. So we need to kind of, you know, mold them, if not, you know, try to figure out a way to kind of come to a compromise, to figure out what's going on and what's the best way to resolve any issues that might arise.
That's right. That's right. Now, just a quick question. Whose idea was it to form this unit that you're a part of? Did it come from the city, or did it come from the community, or was there a think tank from Washington, D.C. that came down and said, hey, let's look at this? How did it come about?
Well, actually, the community relations has had some type of involvement with the school system here, with the Charlotte Mecklenburg schools. But for over the while, because if anybody knows the school system here, for the last maybe 5-6 years, we've had like very superintendents coming through here. We had one, he left after a year and a half, 2 years. Then we have another one that was an interim. So with the change of leadership, there's always a big shift in the schools. So we kind of lost a lot of connections with the schools. Then when me and my coworker Ryan came on board, we started looking at that and we're like, okay, we need to make these connections again. We need to make, you know, how can we get back into the school system? And privately, you know, when I have my spare time, and I do that in quotes, I am on the Mecklenburg County Council of PTAs. So I know the involvement of the PTAs. So I was trying to find ways listening, but actually just getting into the schools and observing the schools and talking to schools that were open to it, because a lot of times schools don't want to realize here in North Carolina, and I don't know about other states, we tend to go with the common cores. We need to, you know, teach towards the testing rather than real life experiences that the kids need to do. So for a while, you know, I'm a product of the Charlotte Mecklenburg schools. I grew up here in Charlotte. And so I remembered when I was in school many years ago, there was something, conflict resolution. There was either an hour or something where, you know, we had circles or we talked things out, or, you know, had little things that the school patrol, you know, those type of things. But now because of the shifting of everybody getting and teaching to towards the test, that was kind of going to, you know, the sidelines. So basically it was just me and Ryan trying to get in there, talking to the school resource officers that are CMPD officers, just trying to, you know, identify schools, see where we can get in there and just go with that. Really, when we started this, we weren't sure what we were going to, what was going to happen, but we had such a great outpour from last year from the schools that we're in. We're like, okay, we're going to continue this, and we're going to build more schools, and, you know, little by little, just grow the program.
Now, here's a tougher question, and that is, was it the schools that had the biggest issues or the biggest problems, or was it the inner city schools or the suburban schools or rural schools? Which schools that, you know, participated?
Well, right now we're going by the schools that are highly diverse, okay? So they're mostly in here in Charlotte. Most schools are now have some diversity. There's like a handful of schools that you can kind of say that are not diverse in some way. But there's a lot of schools here that are. But again, it's just speaking to the principals and having the principals realize that, yes, even though it might not be an academic problem because all the students are doing great, it's a social problem. For instance, you know, South Mimic High School, one of the largest high schools here in North Carolina, is here in Charlotte. And it's highly diverse, you know, of African-American, Latinos, and Caucasians. You know, and it took a while. It took a year of kind of like talking to the principal with the school resource officer and saying, yes, we need to have these conversations. Yes, we need to deal with this because principals have to realize that these kids are going back into the real world and they're not going to be, you know, in their little niches. Where they can be in the schools, either in the cafeteria. So they need to be able to have the social skills and the skills to talk things out.
Gotcha. You know, and the reason I was asking is sort of like you just kind of leading me to where I really wanted to go with this. And that is, you know, NAFCM as an organization, you know, is all about mediation. And now I'm hearing you're talking about mediation and teaching mediation skills to students. The term mediation is not, you know, one that students kind of hear, you know, on a daily basis. So from your perspective, why is teaching mediation skills to students so important?
Well, if you look at the skills of mediation, one of the main things is active listening and learning how to communicate with each other, okay? Not necessarily agreeing with each other, but learning how to facilitate a communication piece. And one thing I teach the kids that if there's two groups of kids that don't come up with an agreement that you personally kind of feel like, well, that's not going to make any sense at all, but it's something that the two parties come up with, that's fine. You know, even if it's something like, I don't want to ever talk to you again, but if it's a reasonable agreement that they can lay out something and have that conversation, you know, I think that's worth it. And that's one thing that I teach the kids is the active listening skills. Understanding each other and the types of conflict resolution styles that, you know, we teach the five conflict resolution styles as a way that not one style is going to outweigh another. Use all five styles at some point in a conversation, but we just need to determine, you know, just because one style might be better for one situation, it's not like the give all for all of conflict. And just teaching that and them understanding. And the one thing that I really try to teach people is if you don't understand what your own conflicts are within personally, how can you help other people deal with their conflicts? So a lot of it is the self-awareness as to, okay, this is my style, this is how, you know, am I able to stay neutral? Am I able to keep myself and my opinions out of the conversation? And those are the skills of a true mediator that needs to kind of build with practice, because it is hard. And then the big word right now with in Charlotte Mecklenburg is the implicit bias.
Okay.
Can we keep our biases out of, or know our biases to know how to keep them in check?
Yeah,
That way it doesn't influence the arrangements or influence the agreement.
Yeah. I want to go back to implicit bias here in a minute, but when I was looking at this and say teaching mediation skills to students, what is the age group or grade level that you're working with?
Right now, we're doing, we have a few middle schools, so sixth graders. So we're talking
okay.
about like 9, 10-year-olds. And we're teaching them the basic of identifying conflict and dealing with the anger issues, basically, because these are kids. Most of the kids are not the high flyers, as I call them. They're not the ones that are on the student government. They're not the ones that are straight A's. Because those kids pretty much already have some subset of these skills. I tell the teachers or the counselors, I want those students that you know are good students, but the shy ones, the ones that always try to stay out of everything, or you know that might have an opinion, because they have that potential to expand their
sure.
skills, but they have that understanding a little bit, and then they can go ahead and just build on that. So we start with middle school, and then and we just work that way those 3 years with a lot of the skills, and then in high school we truly introduce that peer mediation, that process, the actual mediation process. So
it
start off in sixth graders, seventh graders, we try to start off, and then I have a group of high schoolers, started off last year with 10th graders a little bit to see how it goes.
Mm-hmm.
But now I'm backtracking a little bit and just trying to pull them all along.
Yeah, you know, and I think, you know, as the old saying goes, the earlier you start, the better your chances of success at a later date. And so that middle school level is probably a good, you know, a good place to begin working, so that by the time they do reach high school, you know, they will often have had the exposure to the skills and will probably be using the skills even more than just simply starting, you know, at the high school level, even though you can't bypass the high school level, you know, but
yeah,
middle school, good place to start.
Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, in just looking at the dynamics, you know, transition from elementary to middle school. In elementary, you're pretty much in one classroom with a group of classmates that you get to know over the year. But then when you switch to middle school, you get that initiation of switching classrooms, a variety of classmates, a variety of people. And then in high school, it's just like a whole different gamut of people. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I heard you mention the word peer clubs. So what does the peer club look like?
Basically, once we've kind of taught them and we're kind of, you know, assured that they know the skills, what happens is that it's like a peer mediation club. We just take out the word mediation because, like you said, you know, a lot of people, when they hear that word, they get it confused, ironically, with meditating. But we've taken that word out. But basically just being able to sit down and talk about issues that might be, you know, within the campus and kind of guide that, facilitate that conversation within their peers. So we've had, especially in high school, we've had people or kids that two girls maybe that are fighting over something, and, you know, they actually have a facilitated conversation with a peer club member and trying to identify what is really the issue. Is it really, you know, is it just because that person just wore the wrong color one day or something? you know, what is the real issue, and just being able to get to that, you know, underlying reason. But it's just facilitating conversation, a group of conversation. We have these kids come in and they talk about things that might be happening in the school, an issue, and being able to discuss it, not get mad, you know, not, you know, start yelling or anything like that, but just have a conversation to learn those skills that, you know, you can actually understand another point, another person's point of view if you listen to them.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned that word, the big L, a number of times, and I agree with you. You know, that is probably one of the most important skills that you can have, and that is to listen, or to be willing to listen, and to, and I'm not trying to kind of steal your technique or anything, but maybe I am. So how do you teach listening? In other words, that's not an easy one, because people always want to have a rebuttal or response or something to whatever is coming. So particularly when we're talking about kids, and even though kids are taught to be quiet while someone is speaking, they still may not be listening. So what may have been a couple of techniques or tricks that you use to kind of get them to listen?
Well, we do the old, in several of our groups, we've done the old telephone game, you know, where somebody starts from one end and then goes all the way down to the next end, and see if it comes out the same. So we use a variation of telephone groups.
Oh, I remember that one.
Yeah, it's still amazing, because I would sometimes say, okay, group, y'all start talking about the football game that happened last night. This is an example or something like that. And then I'll whisper something to one person, and they still have to be, which is the hard part, that be able to dialogue and also listen to a person, and just how the distraction can really make you misunderstand something. Because we've done it, you know, you're doing a conversation, then something is said, and then we're like, okay, we're all quiet, and we do the same thing. And just use that, you know, talk it out. And then one thing that I kind of tell the group is you listen to understand, but not to respond.
Yeah.
And it takes them a while to kind of catch the meaning. And we do different activities, like we go into a group, and all of a sudden, one thing that I actually learned at a NASCA, an ACR conference, is that you start just talking real fast, you know, about whatever that comes to your mind, and the other person's looking at you, and you're supposed to be listening to that person. Then a bell rings, and it stops. And then you do it over and over, and then you realize that every time you stop and take a breath, you know, you're actually calming yourself down. And so we use that technique, that if you find yourself you're not listening, it's because your mind is racing about the response, that you might need to take that breath and just then refocus.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of activities, especially with the kids, you know, now everything's done by texting and social media. So even that we have to kind of incorporate it into our teachings a little bit. You know, okay, I text this to you. What does it mean? You know,
yeah.
And we kind of, you know, dissect the meaning. What could it mean? How does it mean? You know, just because I put it in caps, or just because now you can put it in different color fonts. And, you know, it just kind of have to kind of, you know, be a little bit creative.
Right. I can see that. Now, tell me, so we have the peer club. Now, is it, how do I want to ask this? Is it by grade level, or is it mixed? How do you identify the students themselves that become a part of the peer club?
We don't identify. We have the schools. That's why we have to have this partnership with the schools, because the administrators or the school counselor or this school resource officers know the kids. So we go in there, and if they want us to go in there, we're like, okay, we would like a group of maybe 8 to 10 kids. And depending on the school, we might have, because I know my coworker, he has like a group of boys. He deals with the boys mostly in middle school. Because in middle school, we also kind of separate them out by gender. Because, again, that middle school age, if you get a group of boys and girls, you know, that's going to be a whole different distraction. So we try to separate them by gender and then by age group. And then usually by the end of the year, we try to get them all together just to see how they kind of evolve together. But we use the assistance of the either the school counselor or the social worker of the school or the school resource officers to help us identify those kids. And, again, it could be those kids that are on that borderline that if they get pushed either way, they might go down the wrong path. So we just kind of readjust the thinking a little bit. And actually, they have become real great, you know, leaders in the school. I mean, because it's now becoming like a group that a lot of kids want to go into because, well, we have the conversations about, you know, and how we deal with the groups themselves. But that's in middle school. And then in high school, what we do is, at least I kind of have a mixture. I try to have, and I use that mentoring philosophy too, that the older kids, since they're going to be graduating, especially 12th grade year, I feel like, okay, and I always make it a point to partner them up with a 9th or 10th grader. And just so that way they can kind of, you know, mentor them a little bit as to even in schoolwork and stuff. And also when they're not in the group, they have that person that's outside that might not be in their circle of friends, but right. Another person they can go to, like in the cafeteria or during the transition of classes or something. So again, it's just a lot of the partnership with the schools and the school resource officers.
Yeah, and I can see where, you know, with a few successes, then the kids would see it as being cool to be a part of the peer group or something like that, because that's where, you know, they get to resolve issues, and that's where they get to, you know, and for the lack of another term, to come together. And I can see that being a cool thing, particularly when, you know, they share with each other, you know, what they're doing. And so you're going to have those that are outside of the group, outside of the peer group, wanting to know, what are you guys doing, or how do you become a part of that, and what do you need to do to get involved? And I can see that when it's done really well and there are some good successes that come out of that, that, you know, you'll have them waiting in line or standing in line or certainly making inquiries in terms of, you know, what do they need to do to be a leader within that group or get involved or something like that, you know. Wow.
Yeah.
That's great. I'm just thinking, you know, and boy, I wish, you know, well, that was a few years ago when I was in high school and all, but certainly it would have been nice to have had something like that, because we only had two choices. Well, I guess it was three choices. Either we went to the principal's office and the principal resolved it for us, or they told our parents about it and our parents resolved it for us. There was no peer group where we get together and look and find what's the best way to resolve or handle things. Of course, you could always fight. That was another option that we had. But this is seems to be a much, much more positive way to resolve disputes, you know, by having, you know, a peer club get involved in it.
Yeah, and actually, Dr. Hank, is that now this year what we're going to introduce is we've made partnerships with the local universities and colleges, and I know UNCC Charlotte, University of North Carolina or Charlotte, they have a conflict resolution program or a mediation, not a mediation program, but like a social work, but it's like underneath social work within that discipline. And we're going to get interns and actually college students to come with us. So that way they can also, those kids that are, you know, well, I don't know what I'm going to do when I grow up, or, you know, what profession can this help me with, and type of thing. So that way we can start introducing them that this could be another thing. This could be a career. This could be something that you can use if you want to do whatever career you want to do. So that way they can also see how everything connects. Because a lot of times, you know, a lot of the school subjects, they wonder, like, okay, how is this going to really help me in when I go to work for real life? You know, how is this going to help me? Because I remember in my, when I was in stats, you know, I was constantly like, okay, when am I going to do stats in my life, you know? and you don't have that real life connection. But now if you have that real life connection, you know, people will, or the kids at least, will start learning it and will be like, okay, this makes sense, you know, this will help me out when I finally get into a career that I want to do.
Yep, sure will. You know, and that is good forward thinking, forward planning on you guys' part to look ahead and see, you know, what's coming down the line and what can be, you know, something that can be, you know, worked out and get the local universities and colleges involved. And, you know, and that's becomes a good source because they need that too. And if they can get, you know, volunteers, you know, they'll be willing to take it back to the universities or college or wherever they're from, you know, and say, hey, let's do that here, you know?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And a question, of course, you guys are having, sounds like lots of fun, and I'm calling it lots of fun. Like you're having lots of fun and enjoying what you're doing. But the big question is, what if there are other schools, cities, organizations out there that would like to do the same thing or something similar? Do you feel or believe that the program can be replicated?
Oh, definitely. I mean, it's basically, the main thing is, I think, is once you get the partnership and the buy-in from either, again, because of our partnership with the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Police Department, we first reached out to the school resource officers. But the buy-in from the school system or from the principals, I mean, because literally, if you are able to get into one school, because last year we got into, my coworker had two middle schools and the arts magnet program that we have. And then that's a high school. And I got into South Mech High School down south in another two groups. So from that, and it was just talking to the right people. And from there, we expanded because people have heard about it. And it's like, hey, why don't you bring it to our school? Can you do our school? You know, and that's where you build it up. But the main thing, even if it's just one school, one middle school, just talking to the teacher or the social worker or whoever's the one that kind of sees and knows the attitudes of the kids, and just pull that together. And then just have that buy-in from there. And then, you know, once you get in there, just, you know, developing the program. And when you talk about kids, you're constantly having to be creative.
Yeah.
I mean, like last year, one of the schools that I just started, restarted this year, last year we had it at the end of the day. So the kids were round up. And so I was constantly thinking of ways of, okay, how to calm them down, how to kind of, you know, get them focused and stuff. This year, because of how the school schedule is, we're having the groups in the morning. And I actually, this morning, I went to the school and the kids were like, well, we have to do it first thing in the morning. And so it was like, okay, now I have to flip it. How do I get them excited? How do I get them riled up? You know, so it's constantly, you know, thinking of ways to make the subject matter interesting to them, because once you get their interest, you know, it's pretty much easier for them to understand and kind of really learn the concepts. But I definitely think it can be repeated. I mean, duplicated anywhere. And if anybody is interested and would like, you know, our curriculum or our outline as to do it, I mean, I am more than happy to share that with anybody. I mean, that's part of NAFTA's whole thing, that we try to collaborate amongst our centers and stuff, so that we're not reinventing the wheel.
Yeah, I'm sure there would be, you know, a number of schools or entities interested. And what's the best way to reach you in order to get that information?
Well, they can either email me. My email is pretty simple. It's my name, Maura, M-A-U-R-A, .Chavez, C-H-A-V-E-Z, @ Charlotte, C-H-A-R-L-O-T-T-E-N-C, .gov.
Okay, one more time.
It's Maura, M-A-U-R-A, .Chavez, C-H-A-V-E-Z, @ Charlotte, C-H-A-R-L-O-T-T-E-N-C, .gov.
Gotcha. Well, Charlotte, you know, this sounds really, really good, but, you know, like we always say, anytime there's something good, there's always something maybe not good, or there's always a downside to it or whatever. And I'm just throwing this out there. Maybe there isn't, but what barriers have been identified as you've been doing this?
Just the concept of getting the buy-in from the principals, for one thing. And sometimes, you know, depending on your school system, you might even have to go to the school management team or what have you. So getting that buy-in from them, because depending on the school system, and I'm just talking about Charlotte, we are so geared college readiness or teaching the EOGs or the end of the grade testing that sometimes the common sense, as I call it, the common sense teaching, might get sidelined. So, you know, just having that buy-in from the administration is one obstacle. And then the other one is keeping the kids engaged. You know, if you're the type of person that really can't, you know, deal with kids, which it was an adjustment to me, because my two kids that I have, they're 17 and 18, and when I go back and talk to middle school, I'm like, whoa, you know, that this is a different culture right now, you know.
Yeah.
And for my sake, yes, me learning to take off my mommy hat, as they call it, you know, not to go into that mommy mode, like, okay, you're not going to be doing that with me, you know, that type of thing, because you have to understand that these kids, you know, first of all, they just want to be heard. They basically want to be heard, so you have to have that ability and that capability. And just maybe if anything, funding, because I know this year we were able to get some extra funding to buy extra incentives. We were able to get, like, notebooks and pens and, you know, hoodies, so that the kids can identify with the club itself. So just those basic obstacles, you know, because sometimes once you get the buy-in, once you get the adjustment of dealing with kids, the curriculum itself, it's once you get the hang of it, it's easy to learn. I mean, you can sometimes I go in and it's a nice flow. Kids are engaged. They wanna learn, and they wanna learn this new concept that nobody else is learning in their school right now. So,
well, I can see where you may be getting, you know, some calls or maybe getting some emails that are saying, you know, Maura, this sounds really good. You know, send me the recipe or send me the how-to book or on getting started with this. How long, and maybe I should have asked this earlier on, so if someone wanted to get something like this kind of up and running, how long do you think it would take before it would be up and running?
Well, for us, it took about at least half a school year, half a school year to get, you know, the buy-in and then get, like, initial groups together. And then after that, it just depends. Again, you have to kind of go on the school's time period, which is it's always a hard thing to kind of guess.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, this until the school systems realize that this is more than a, you know, as some of the schools have told us, non-essential concept, they won't
yes.
necessarily make the time for it. So, you know, testing is always going to become the priority, you know, so you have to make your adjustments there. But about, you know, once you make those connections, and this doesn't stop for us. Like during the summer, you know, a lot of people think, oh, schools are down, you know, we're not doing anything. It's like, no, we're still continuing making those connections with these schools
mm-hmm.
and telling these schools, you know, hey, this is happening. This is a good thing for us to do. Can we walk into your school? How do you think about this? So it's a constant conversation that we're doing.
Okay, okay. Last question for you here, and this one is, sort of on the parents' side, how do the parents view this? I mean, you know, do they see it as more work for the kids or something good or just, you know, a longer day, let's say, for the kids? Or
one thing that I try to do with the school is at some point, either, you know, be it the beginning, middle, or even at the end, have a meeting with the parents and or have like a sit down or have something go out to the parents to for them to understand. Because this sometimes will change kids, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I know when I first came on board, my family kind of realized, like, okay, Mom, you're talking weird. What are you talking about? You know, what do you mean by how do you feel? You know, it's a life changer sometimes. Just how
yeah.
you present yourself, how you express your ideas. So I wanted them to be prepared, like, okay, if your child is, you know, asking you what is your point of view or certain key phrases that we try to teach them to kind of identify that they are actively listening, don't be
mm-hmm.
alarmed, you know, it's your kid. They've just learned certain components. And a lot of parents are really pleased with the program. I have yet to have anybody that says, oh, I don't want my kid in there and I want them out. Because they see it as a positive change.
Good.
Yeah, because most of the time it's just that listening. I know one parent told me that, you know, it was just strange that she had gotten accustomed that her child would, every time when they started a conversation and that the child didn't agree with it, storm off to her room and stuff like that. But now she would actually sit and listen and try to express her. I was like, well, that's good. You know, she's learning
yes.
how to refocus to do that. So it's a positive, you know, life changer.
Okay. Well, before I let you go, is there a success story that when you're out talking to, let's say, the city or other schools, you can hold this situation up and say, here's a success story that occurred when the kids, when the peer group got together and worked on something, or how do you convince them? Not necessarily convince them, but most people want to hear a success story. So what's a success story that you share?
I think the biggest success story that we can have at this point is that all the schools that we started in, they have our continuity and even to expand it within the school. And the kids that we've had last year, you know, because sometimes the kids will have it 1 year, and I'm like,
right.
oh, I did that last year. I don't want to do it again this year.
Mm-hmm.
At least with me and my coworker, all the kids have returned. They haven't really kind of opted out of it. They want to do it again, and they want to continue with the club. They want to do that. So I think that is the biggest piece. That
mm-hmm.
it's something that the kids are so engaged and invested in at this point that they want to continue to the next level. And we're talking about kids in middle school age, you know, and I always kind of compare it to bands and football and all these, like, they'll try for a year,
mm-hmm.
and if they weren't good at it, or even if they were good at it, they might get bored
right.
with it and they move on to something else. this is something that they really are invested in and they really want to continue it every year. And one thing personally with my group of girls that I do at one middle school, my greatest success story is that they had a high tendency of walking out of class or not being able to express themselves. I learned that at the end of the year, that reduced. I don't know about percentages because I'm not really, like I said, mean statistics never got along. But from the counselor's point of view, she saw the attitude, how they it shifted to more positive.
Yeah.
They come in with a better view as to what the school or what things they learn at school can help in life.
Well, that's certainly a good success story, you know. So before I let you go, one more thing, and that is I know you shared it with the listeners here earlier, but could you repeat maybe your contact information, because I can just see others maybe wanting to get a hold of you.
Well, my email is mara.chavez@charlottenc.gov. Mara, M-A-U-R-A, dot Chavez, C-H-A-V-E-Z, at Charlotte, C-H-A-R-L-O-N-C.gov. And I'm going to go ahead and give my office number. My office number is 704-336-4988.
Fantastic. Mara, I know you probably could have been eating lunch and just kind of kicking back and enjoying your wonderful day, but you chose to spend it with me and my listeners. And so let me be the first to say thank you very much. I appreciate you being on and sharing this wonderful information on the Dr. Hank Show. And I hope everything in Charlotte comes up roses.
Thank you, and thank you for allowing me to be on the show. I really do appreciate it, and definitely to be able to spread the word about this new program that we have here in Charlotte. I mean, definitely, if anybody wants any information, you know, contact me, and I'll be more than happy to share it.
Okay, well, again, Mara, thank you very much. I'll be looking forward to hearing more about this, and as I'm always in touch with NAFCOM, I'm pretty sure I'll be hearing more about some of those wonderful things coming out of the Charlotte Mecklenburg Community Relations Department and the work that you're doing there. So thanks for being on the show today.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye now. This is Dr. Hank, and you've been listening to the Dr. Hank Show. You're listening to, well, you heard a great discussion around dispute resolution and youth programs. You know, when we think about dispute resolution, a lot of times the focus is always on adults. And not saying that that's not a good place for it to be, because it really is. I mean, goodness knows there's a lot of disputes that adults have. Also, a lot of disputes that are held by teenagers, disputes that are held by middle schoolers. And so there ought to be programs in place, just like they are at the adult level, for middle schoolers and high schoolers to resolve disputes. And what you heard today was one that is coming out of the Charlotte Mecklenburg Community Relations Department, one called a peer club, where, you know, the peers get together and they look at and they discuss perhaps a dispute and work out what's the best way for it to be resolved. So I think that's a great approach. So if you're not doing anything like that, hey, reach out to Mara Chavez. She gave you all of the contact information, and even at the end, she shared her phone number. So take advantage of that. You know, we don't always get, you know, good advice or good free information coming over the airwaves, but I think certainly this is one. So if I were you, and that's why I told you at the beginning of the show today, grab your pen and paper, a pencil and paper, because some good information was coming your way. So hopefully you'll find that this was good and you found it very helpful. And thanks for listening to the show today. before I say goodbye and see you next week, I just want to run through a few things that's happening at the Society of Emotional Intelligence. I kind of mentioned some of them at the beginning of the show, but I just wanted to kind of mention a few on the back end here. One is the annual conference is about 6 months away. It's going to be in Orlando, Florida. It's going to be our 9th annual conference, but it's also going to be the 10th anniversary of the Society of Emotional Intelligence. So I want everyone to start making plans. Mark the date, April 5 and 6. Mark it on your calendar right now so that you can start to save, put your money in your piggy bank, put your money in, you know, some savings account, wherever you, whatever you do to save it. I want you to start making plans to attend the 9th annual Society of Emotional Intelligence International Conference. It's going to be held at the Florida Hotel and Conference Center, which is in Orlando, Florida. And while you're here, you might want to, you know, visit Disney or something like that too. So make it a fun and enjoyable and a learning experience. That's April 5 and 6 of 2019. And I know 2019 is next year and it sounds like it's a long ways off, but it really isn't. 2019 will be here before you know it. The other thing that's coming up, and this is coming up in a couple of weeks, we're going to be having the EQI 2.0 certification. The certification is for people who want to learn more about emotional intelligence, but also use a tool called the EQI 2.0 to develop the emotional intelligence of others. And so you can use the tool for that purpose, as well as helping assess the emotional intelligence of someone else. Now, most coaches and change agents and HR people, they use the tool, but it's not restricted or it's not only for that group of individuals. It's for anyone who wants to assess their emotional intelligence. It's called the EQI 2.0. We're doing a certification in that. It's going to be in Orlando, Florida as well. And that is October 12 and 13. And for those of you that are looking to learn more about emotional intelligence, we have three. You heard me correct. Three webinars that's going to be on October 19th. Three webinars, back to back to back. They're going to start at 11 a.m. on October 19th, and they're going to run all the way through 2 p.m. on October 19th. So you might want to look and find out more about that. You can just go to our website, societyofei.org, societyofei.org. Go to the conference page. It'll give you information about the webinar, how to sign up, also what they're going to be talking about, the content of the webinar, the takeaways from the webinar, the whole nine yards. So if you're looking to become more aware of, understand more about, and more skilled in the field of emotional intelligence, then those three seminars, those three webinars are for you. Again, you can register for those by going to our website, societyofei.org. Go to the conference page, and on the conference page, you'll see the three webinars. They are being presented by two of our finest chairs. One is in New York, the other one is in South Florida, and also one of our experts in emotional intelligence, Matt Perlstein, he's out in California, but they are three experts in the field of emotional intelligence, and you'll be sure to get a lot from those three webinars. So be sure to get online, sign up for those. October 19th is the date, and they will run from 11 until 2. So if you haven't registered, don't waste any time. Just go over there and register now. This is Dr. Hank saying thanks for being with us today. I'll be back next week with a brand new show. Look forward to seeing everyone then. So please go out and have an EI day.